We're talking about music and memory in this hour. And did you know that 90% of the music we listen to is music we've heard before? We like to think that we've got adventurous taste in music, but turns out what we really crave is repetition. In fact, to a certain extent, repetition is what turns random sound into music. Elizabeth Margulis directs the Music Cognition Lab at the University of Arkansas, and she's the author of On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind. She'd like to correct a common misconception that music is a kind of language.
Music is not really like a language. So, I mean, it's one of those metaphors that's really out there. As I was growing up, I went to Interlochen Arts Camp over the big stage there. They have it emblazoned in large letters. Music is the universal language. But maybe there are some things going on in music that aren't really the same as what's going on in language. I'll give you some examples, maybe. When we think back to what happened in a story somebody told us, we tend to remember the gist of what happened, not the specific words they used to tell the story to us. Mm-hmm. But if we try to remember back to a song we listened to or a piece we really enjoyed, there's something about the actual specific sequence of notes that is still very present and verbatim in our memory, and in fact, really gripping.
So you don't necessarily remember the overall plot or shape of a Beethoven concerto, but you could probably hum some of your favorite bars.
That's exactly right. So there's a great example that Mark DeBellis uses in a book he wrote called Conceptualizing Music, where he asks, if you think about the Star Spangled Banner, right, and you think, okay, the word O and the word U, were those sung on the same pitch? And really, to answer that question, what you have to do is go back in and sing through the tune.
I just did it in my head while you were talking.
Yeah, you can't just duck in and get to one little snippet. They're all welded together so tightly in your mind that one note seems to just kind of inevitably spill out of the preceding one. And I think that tight connection from note to note is really an effect that is created through repetition.
Hmm. One of the most interesting things you point out is the connection between repetition, music, and speech. And there's this speech-to-song illusion that somebody named Diana Deutsch came up with. Maybe you could explain it.
Sure. Diana Deutsch is a psychologist at the University of California at San Diego. And the illusion, actually, the one that's most famous, involves her own voice speaking. And what you hear is simply an utterance, just a regular spoken utterance. And then you hear a snippet from that repeated a number of times.
The sounds as they appear to you are not only different from those that are really present, but they sometimes behave so strangely as to seem quite impossible.
And then what you need to do is just go back and listen to the original utterance again.
The sounds as they appear to you are not only different from those that are really present, but they sometimes behave so strangely as to seem quite impossible.
And for many people, for about 85% of people, you experience a remarkable perceptual shift where at the moment you get to the little clause that's been repeated, it sounds like Diana Deutsch has bust into song in the style of a Disney musical. It's really quite stunning because it's the exact same acoustic signal. So what has changed is the perceptual apparatus we're bringing to understand it, not anything about the sound itself.
Yeah, I didn't hear it as busting into a great big Disney musical, but it did sound as though she sang that little section of speech
yeah.
a little bit more. And still, I went away from it thinking, I don't know, that's not such a dramatic difference. And then I was walking down the hallway and I found myself humming that little tiny
bit
of her speech.
It'll get you every time.
It did. It became an earworm. What's going on in our brains that makes them convert repeated speech, you know, just a few words repeated into music?
Well, maybe the easiest way to start thinking about that is to think about a different allusion that we've known about for much longer. This one comes from Severance and Washburn more than 100 years ago, and it's called the semantic satiation effect. What you do here is you just grab a patient friend and you ask them to repeat a word to you again and again and again for about a minute. And over the course of that minute, some trippy things start to happen. Normally, when you hear a word in a language you speak, it's pretty hard not to just feel the word as a transparent window into its semantic correlate. So if I say light bulb, for example, you know, you picture the little glowing object. But if I say light bulb to you 75 times, it loses its connection to the real world object it typically denotes. And instead, you become hyper attentive to small little subtle things about the word. Like you notice that the L sound returns twice or that the B is this strange kind of acoustic burst. It's really quite strange. It's as if the sound has devolved into nonsense. And it's something you really hear rather than something that you think about and notice. It's a salient change in just the basic way you're experiencing the sound.
So could you turn any sound into music just by repeating it?
That's a great question, because lots of people, when they first hear that example of the speech-to-song allusion, they say, oh, well, she has this lovely British accent, and it's all very melodic, and, you know, maybe the deck was stacked in her favor. We do have really interesting data that show that you can take speech, repeat it, make it seem more musical. In my lab, for example, we took random sequences of sounds, repeated them, caused those to sound more musical to people. But that's not to say that you can record something in your basement, send it to some top 40 radio station, and become the mega hit superstar Justin Bieber of tomorrow.
In other words, there's repetition and then there's repetition. And it also depends on what you're choosing to repeat.
That's right. I mean, there's so much other stuff going on. I'm simply saying that there's this practice that's at the bottom and kind of giving air to all of these other musical features, which is putting them on repeat. Just that this is an agent of musicalization, but it's not the only game in town.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Love, don't hurt me. No more.
So we've been talking about the kind of repetition that's pleasurable in music. Of course, there's another kind that's not so pleasurable. There's a phenomenon, we tend to call it the earworm these days. You know, that piece of music that gets stuck in your head and you just can't get it out, and it can get really irritating. Is that another kind of musical repetition?
That's true, because earworms, I mean, if you think about them, they could have been luxurious. They could just be our own personal life soundtrack, right? But the thing is, they don't work that way. It's not that you get a song stuck in your head and the whole thing goes through accompanying your run or something, then you wouldn't need an iPod. Unfortunately, what happens with an earworm, typically, is that a fragment of that music gets stuck in your head. And not only is it just this little fragment, but it plays through on repeat. So even in our own minds, when we're imagining music, and sometimes involuntarily, we're stuck in this kind of repetitive sequencing that is so characteristic of the way we experience and use music in the world.
Does everybody have that experience? Does everyone get earworms?
Well, there have been some interesting studies recently trying to look at exactly how common this experience is. It seems to be that more than 90% of people report experiencing them at least once a week.
So, wow, once a week.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people. But this is maybe even more surprising. About a fourth of people report, so 25%, report experiencing them several times a day.
Oh my God, several times a day. That's a
Can
lot.
Can you imagine?
That's like musical torture.
And it seems to be associated with musical aptitude or musical behavior. So the more you play music and are involved with music in your life, the more susceptible you tend to be to earworms as well.
Where did that concept even come from?
You know, it's fun because so many different languages have their own funny expressions for the earworm. In some places, their name translates to tormenting songs or other horrible things. But they've been around for a long time, we know, because Mark Twain wrote a short story about this sinister earworm that overtook an entire town even before the gramophone had been invented and disseminated. So wow. We know that this was happening even before technology perhaps made it even likelier.
Elizabeth Margolis directs the Music Cognition Lab at the University of Arkansas, and she's the author of On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind.